1850-715-815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number. David Gillen. David, good afternoon.
How you doing, Joe?
You say you paid €60 for your travel insurance at the time. It was a couple of years ago. But it was the best €60 you ever spent. What happened?
Oh, yeah. I was on a J1 visa with my friends back in 2004. And we were heading over to South Boston. I was actually going to be working in construction, renovating houses. Mm-hmm. And it was a clear sunny day, July 2nd, 2004. And there was a ladder on the balcony. And I went over to grab the ladder. And believe it or not, it was hit by lightning.
In the middle of a clear day, no
clear
storm.
Clear day,
no.
Sun was shining, getting ready for July 4th weekend for a barbecue in the boss's house. And there was a ladder on the balcony and a beautiful sunny day. And I went out just to grab the ladder because I thought it was going to fall over. And that's when the lightning hit me and sent me into a coma.
And what did you think had happened, David?
To be honest with you, I still remember that every day, that moment. But I wasn't sure it was a hit by lightning until it was the doctors that reassured me it was, because the bang. The noise was so loud that, you know, everything kind of, it just knocked me out.
So you, for that split second, are you thinking an electric shock or were you thinking someone hit you from behind?
I knew it was something out of, you know, out of the ordinary, because the pain I felt that moment, as soon as I grabbed that ladder, the bang and the noise, and I woke up and I was in the hospital. With doctors and nurses, so I didn't know whether it was a dream or was it surreal or what was happening. Do you get me?
Yes.
I knew something bad had happened to me to get from A to B.
And what was your condition?
When I was hit by lightning, I had a heart attack, and I burned from the inside out, so my clothes and my boots were melted. And for me, it was my nervous system. My nervous system was completely shattered, so I had no movement down from my neck, just for 24 hours. I couldn't feel below my neck. Mm. And then I went in and out of a coma for 24 hours.
How long were you in hospital for?
Thank God I was only in hospital for intensive care for a week. But, yeah, it was one of those moments that you never forget. And thanks to the medical team at the Boston Medical Center and all the doctors and specialists and nurses that cared for me. Because when you get hit by lightning, it's kind of, you don't really know how to treat the patient. You get me? You just have to review from other patients who've been hit by lightning around the world. They come together to see, because sometimes I had movement, other days I did have movement. So it's to kind of deal with the unknown.
Any after effects? This was what, 6 or 7? Any after effects?
Yeah, long standing. I've been in
hospital
in and out, I'd say, just for checkups, because sometimes if I'm physically sick, I may not be able to feel it. So skin lesions and stuff like that, because I burned very, very minimalistic. I burned from the inside out, so I have scars on my chest and my shoulder and my back. But, you know, I'm lucky to be here, Second Chance Saloon.
And then the insurance, you had your insurance policy, which cost
you... Oh, Jesus, yes, this is the thing. I was writing away in the kitchen, and I just heard something on the radio about insurance policies and J1 visa. And if anyone for listening, my medical bills were way over the 100,000 mark. And if I can bring it back, it's a funny moment at the time. But when I was brought into hospital, I had my wallet and I had my little insurance card. And I don't think they were going to see me in the hospital, because they probably knew how expensive it was going to be. But I had travel insurance. I was blessed. And that paid for my physio after hospital in Boston and in Florida. And funny enough, with Americans, you can't legally leave the country until I was physically fit, just in case they thought I was going to sue the doctors. All I cared about was walking again. Was I going to sue the state or the hospital? But that's just their way of thought. But
and David, was there at any stage, because we do hear of insurance companies trying to minimise the amount they have to pay out.
No, they were, VHI, they were incredible. They actually rang me up in the hospital. This Dutch guy actually was on the phone. You know, Dutch sense of humour. He was ringing me up to say that had never had anyone been hit by lightning in the history of VHI, and they just wanted to speak to me personally. So I thought that was funny. I didn't know, was that a good thing or a bad thing, that the insurance company would ring the intensive care?
But David, it wasn't to say to you, listen, this is an act of God and it is specifically excluded in their insurance policy.
No, I was lucky, because they covered it, no matter if it was the PR angle, but I wouldn't say so. They paid for everything. I was blessed. I was lucky, because if I hadn't insurance, the hospital wouldn't have seen me. I know that much.
Okay, stay with us for a sec. That's David Gilna, 51551. Pádraig Sealer is on the other line. Pádraig, good afternoon. But Pádraig is the subject, unfortunately, of our next conversation, but his father's with us, Reinhard. Reinhard, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
How are you? It's been a very, very tough...
Not too well, actually.
It's a very tough year. It happened on the 1st of March 2013. That's when you... Just give us a sequence of events, because your son was also on a J-1 visa, also in the United States. What happened?
Yeah, our son, Pádraig, went to the States to work there last summer on the J-1 visa. He got a whole package that he bought from GoFoLess. That included, the flight, the visa arrangements, and the travel insurance. And he went over there, and one morning, he was on his way to work on his bicycle and got hit by a truck from behind. And it was a very bad accident. Was transferred from the place where it happened to Hyannis to Cape Cod Hospital,
right,
and was operated on, and hasn't really woken up since then. So he got a very bad brain injury. Nothing else, was injured. There's no other injuries. Even his bicycle was almost no scratch on the bicycle. And he stayed in Cape Cod Hospital. We went over there to see him. And then, because he was in a very bad state, we thought, well, we should really bring him back home, because it was such a different environment there. We were completely disoriented. The doctors there were talking about, organ donations, we just wanted to bring him back home. And we had a different experience with the insurance.
Yeah.
So we got a cover. Well, the hospital got a cover note for to cover his treatment from the day that he arrived in the hospital there. But then when we started to try to make contact with them to see that they could they bring him back home, could they organize the repatriation, it turned out to be very, very difficult. So we, over the best part of a week, we had, we were trying to make contact with them. We talked. It turned out that the company that we bought the insurance policy from had the insurance arranged with another company who was then covered by an underwriter. And it was, it all very quickly became very, very complicated. And we were talking to more than half a dozen different companies, more than a dozen people. And eventually, after about a week, they asked us to send them Pádraig's policy that he had. So we we thought that was we couldn't believe this, because we thought, he bought the policy from them, they should have it. But we found it, which was very difficult, and the whole period was extremely... I mean, we were there day and night at the hospital, and we didn't sleep, and it was terrible. And we had to deal with all this. And
were they looking, Reinhard, do you reckon they were looking for a clause in the insurance? I mentioned there with David about an act of God, but were they looking for a clause in the insurance policy that might get them out?
That's what they did. So we sent them the policy, and the next day in the morning, we got a phone call from them saying that they would decline cover because on page, 27 page policy, on page 11, on the 11th bullet point, under, sports and activities, that, that was a long, long list of very, very small print, from archery to yachting. It said that cycling was covered, but only if wearing a helmet. That was kind of level one sports and activities. In the meantime, I read the policy. So when you go to level two, you actually, if you can do cycling, touring, without wearing a helmet. But anyway, they found this clause, and they decided that was enough to bail them out, and they declined all cover, which, you know, sent us into shock and panic on top of what has happened to Park. And we thought we'd have to face the bill, not just for bringing him back home, but also for the hospital there. And then it turned out that, well, we pleaded with them, and eventually they covered the repatriation ex gratia, so kind of out of the bottom of their hearts. Yeah. And it turned, well, he's still Park. So Park is getting notices from Cape Cod Hospital for an outstanding bill of more than $100,000. That hasn't been paid. And we hope that, I mean, we have also had private health insurance with our family, with Leia, and we hope that that they will cover that. But so far, it hasn't been paid.
So you still have that. Okay, Park has got back to Ireland, and we know there's another step involved, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes. But do you still have this awful, and I think you articulated it so well, that awful stress, first of all, that you had physical, mental stress, and then you still have an overhang, a question mark about insurance if the hospital are looking for 100,000. And why have the insurance, are they still operating on in the ex gratia mode, as they call it?
Well, it's terribly, the whole thing with insurances, in our case at least, was terribly complicated. So, you know, we thought that Park had bought this package from, you know, one company, which was Go for Less. Then it turned out that, you know, the insurance, the bit of the travel insurance was covered by Blue Insurance.
Okay.
They employ Specialty Group, which is kind of a specialty exist group. But, you know, if something happens to you, that's the number you ring. That was in the UK. Then they have a sponsor company. There's OSG Claims. There are two underwriter companies. You know, one in the UK, and then that is owned by another company in Germany. And all of those have also offices in the States. So there's it's impossible for us to understand who's working with whom and for whom, and how all this hangs together. I mean, we hope that it will all be cleared up eventually, because we hope that, you know, even if the travel insurance doesn't pay for this, that layer will, because they have the same, you know, they have this thing that if you need hospitalization abroad, they cover you up to 100,000 euro, I think. And it's, you know, this is 8-9 months, you know, and the letter that Corey got was basically saying that if the insurance company doesn't pay, he will have to.
And Reinhard, on the issue of the bicycle helmet, right? Did they say in the clause that was Parik doing anything illegal in that part of the United States by not wearing a bicycle helmet? Is it obligatory?
No. I don't know if anybody that knows Cape Cod in the summer, you know, it is, you know, it's warm, you know. Mm-hmm. There's very little public transport, so, you know, the hundreds or thousands of kids that go there in the summer, you know, they buy bicycles,
the bike, yeah.
And they cycle around it. If you're looking for a job, you have to move around around the place. And really, the only way is to do that cycling. And everybody cycles without a helmet. You know, well, not everybody, but, you know, unless you do kind of racing or, you know, something else. I mean, people don't wear helmets, and they don't have to. You know, if in Massachusetts, if you're under, I think it's under 16, you have to wear a helmet. But, you know, if you're an adult, you don't. You don't have to wear a helmet. And so it's nothing illegal. He was not doing any sports even. I mean, he was just commuting to his job, for which he, you know, and he had bought a package, you know, to go to the States to work there. And it looks like as if he was sold an insurance policy that was just not fit for purpose. You know? I mean, people that sold him this policy, they were, you know, they're one of the two specialist companies in the country, and they should know what people, you know, what students that go to the States do when they go there, because there's loads of students and lots, you know, all of his friends that were and there were cycling.
And one would have thought one of the least risky things students do is cycle to and from work in on a summer's day on a clear day. Reinhard, then you get to the second phase, which is the reason why you wrote to the Taoiseach there at the beginning of March. What, because you got Pádraig home, and then what happened?
Yeah, we got Pádraig home because we wanted him to be at home. Mm-hmm. We wanted him to be with his friends, and you know, we were looking. You know, we wanted to be kind of in an environment that was, you know, that was supportive and not as strange as the US to us. And well, what happened was that, you know, he arrived there in the middle of July, and he went into the ICU for about 2 weeks or so, maybe 2.5 weeks. And then he was transferred to a high dependency ward in Beaumont. And, you know, he was in a 6-bed ward. We were quite happy to have him there and to have him back home. And then over time, you know, we learned things and we talked to other families, and we kind of realized that, you know, that, you know, an acute care hospital, you know, a ward in a hospital where people go to get operated on and then leave once that operation has been done, mm-hmm. that is not a place where, you know, a sick person should be for, you know, a longer period of time. And we were introduced to consultants from the National Rehabilitation Hospital who, you know, were talking about rehab. And at the beginning, we didn't know. Well, I thought I'd misunderstood rehab, because I thought rehab was, you know, if you needed to, you know, need to walk again, learn how to walk again after hip replacement or something like that, or a broken limb, learn how to use that again. But there is also neuro rehab, and there's early neuro rehab. And the more we learned about that, the more we found out, you know, the firmer was our opinion that, you know, that he was really in the wrong place. We were told by the NRH that first, I think it was kind of another 4 months of waiting, and then it was until, you know, this summer. So it was almost a year of a waiting time since the accident. And then we talked to specialists in the UK and specialists in Germany, and the Germans were telling us that, you know, leaving somebody in Pádraig's condition in an acute hospital like that for months on end was unethical and grotesque. So we kind of panicked. We also saw what was happening to, you know, to other patients there, and what was happening to Pádraig. And it was the wrong place to be in for, you know, a prolonged period of time, because the care and the treatments, you know, the people, individuals tried really, really hard, mm-hmm. but it didn't work out really. So we tried to figure out how we could pay for treatment abroad. We were told by a consultant from the NRH not to bother flying for the treatment abroad scheme, because, you know, she had tried before and she wouldn't waste her time. And then we went to a bank and got our house approval for a remortgage, remortgaging arrangement for our house. And then I went to Germany a few times and found out that, you know, because Pádraig has dual nationalities, German and Irish, and that, you know, if a German person decides to move back to Germany, that he has to be insured. So we arranged that, and the only delay then in getting him from Ireland to Germany was the derangement of the flight, which we had to pay for because it was all air ambulances. But it's, you know, we didn't want to leave. You know, we have family. We have two other daughters in Dublin who are 19 and 25, and that we don't, you know, we don't want to leave them on their own. We want to be with them. We didn't want to move Pádraig away from the country and the culture and everything that he loves so much and his friends. You know, we are working and we are, you know, commuting between Ireland and Germany and try to cope as much as we can. And it's, you know, on top of everything else, on top of, you know, having to support our son who is in a terrible condition, it's something that really puts a strain on us. It is barely, you know, I don't know, it's very, very hard to live with. And the most shocking thing really is that this is something, you know, that can happen to anyone anytime. You know, it happened out of the blue. For the first few weeks, we thought we were living in a movie. You know, we thought we were going to wake up and it was all going to go away. And then we realized that it wouldn't go away and that we had to try and find a way to deal with it and cope with it. And then we realized, you know, this system failure that is there, you know, the insurance companies that don't own up to their promises. I mean, Bark had a 6.5 million health travel insurance. You know, we didn't see a penny of that. And then the health system, you know, James Riley calls, you know, this calls the system that is broken. You know, and calls it this broken health system. So that's why we wrote to the Taoiseach and said, well, you know, somebody, you know, that deserves more than anybody else, you know, to be looked after by the state, because he is in such a bad and tragic, devastating circumstance. Mm-hmm. You know, that he has to leave to get, you know, the most basic treatment and care that somebody like him deserves.
And as you pointed out there, Aaron,
unacceptable.
You were told there are only 3 beds in Ireland for patients with poorly severe brain injuries. There's a waiting list, obviously. But in the Hamburg scenario, how did you choose the hospital in Hamburg, and what was it like trying to get Porrig into that hospital?
It was very easy. Okay. You know, I mean, there, as you say, you know, in Ireland, and this is nothing new, you know, I mean, this is it's a little bit like in Polish, you know, where the parents try to highlight issues, and it turned out that it was all well known for years. I mean, it's well known for years that Ireland is by far, you know, has by far the lowest number of beds and lowest number of rehab consultants in Europe by far. In Ireland, there's just 3 beds for patients in Porrig's condition, and they usually get 3 months. When we looked at Germany here, and we were in Hamburg at the moment, to get him into this hospital was, you know, talking to the doctors, sending them the medical reports, and within a week we were told that we could bring him. There was no delay whatsoever, yeah. None. And it's not limited to 3 months, so we have been here now since the beginning of November, and we haven't been told that his treatment is going to end anytime soon. So, luckily, you know, he is making progress very, very slow and very, very painfully slow. But he is making progress. And as they say, well, as long as somebody like him who is young, 23 years old, you know, is making progress, they're going to help him to get better. And they say, you know, young people like that can perform miracles. And that's what we're, you know, they can go anywhere. And they can, even if they're in a very, very bad shape at the beginning, they can recover and get better. And as long as that is happening, and as long as they see that, they will not abandon him, which is, you know, what happened from day one almost. Not that bad, but it doesn't happen in Ireland. But there's no. Everybody knows that, you know, acute rehabilitation is necessary. Everybody knows that, you know, patients like that should not and cannot really be treated appropriately in an acute hospital like Beaumont, you know, where the patients are being operated on, where there's, you know, day and night there's activity, and you know, where it is really hard to coordinate between therapists and the nursing staff and, you know, on the ward, and, you know, where there's 6 patients in one ward, you know, they're all, you know, in pretty bad shape, and you know, where people sometimes, you know, I mean, people acquire, and it's well known, and Beaumont was closed a couple of times during the winter for bugs, and there's, you know, multi-resistant bugs. And there's all sorts of things that are going on there that you don't really want your son to be in that kind of environment for a long time.
Stay with us, Reinhard, because I've one of Patrick's friends who contacted us earlier, and we'll talk to him after this break.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie. Ciarán McCarthy is on with Reinhard. Now, Ciarán is in Parmastown in Dublin, but you were in the States last June with Patrick, Ciarán. You'd only just become buddies.
Sorry?
You'd only just met each other relatively recently. Was that true?
How did we become goodies? Well, basically, me and another guy went over to Cape Cod, and we were there for 2 weeks. And we went for 2 weeks, and then we bumped into two guys that were living with us, and hard to eat. And just one guy here to talk to me. It's hard to eat.
Okay.
We got to know two guys, and then they asked if Warwick wants to move in with us. So we said, yeah, take him in, no problem. And then 5-6 weeks down the road, then the accident happened.
And you were in work when you got the call?
I was, yeah. I got called about 11:30 American time from my friend Neil McEnany. Mm-hmm. And then I went and I rushed home, cycled home, and we got to know a lot of American friends over there that they brought us to the hospital with cars, because we had no cars over there at the time. And they brought us to the hospital then, and then we got to the hospital and we knew how serious it was then. When one of our friends was there, Keen Walter, Steve was there. When we got to the hospital, and then he told us what the crack was, and then one of the guys broke down in tears, I remember, and then I knew straight away it was serious.
Yeah. And Ciarán, I know you're involved in fundraising. It's one of the reasons you contacted you, but you've been trying to highlight the whole. What are you doing on the fundraising front?
What we're doing is we're basically swimming the coast at 17 coastal counties in Ireland, mm-hmm. and we're going to be doing that in 2 days, from the 12th to the 13th of April, to raise funds for Patrick.
Okay. Stay with us, Ciarán, because Reinhard, as you heard before, you're on David Gilna contact. David did say at the end he wanted to pass on his message of hope. And I hope you have it, Reinhard, because David made the point that when he suffered his catastrophic injuries, he was told he would never walk again, but he's back on his feet, thank God. So hopefully, as you said, Patrick has youth on his side, so hopefully that will keep battling for him.
Yes. Yes, I mean, there are always, you know, good things coming out of really, really bad things. And, you know, whereas the system has basically failed him, I could not believe, and we or our whole family couldn't believe, the tremendous support that he's getting from all his fans. And, it's, you know, there is, we thought that when we brought him to Hamburg, we thought, well, you'll be taking him away from Ireland and his mm-hmm. fans. And what has happened is that there's somebody here all the time, almost. There's a constant stream of visitors. They're organizing fundraising, which is what shouldn't really be needed. I mean, you shouldn't have to do fundraising and trying to lobby your local politicians to get access to basic care. But they're doing this, and they're doing the tremendous activity there. I mean, the next one of the things that they're doing is organizing a swim.
I think that's the line gone from Germany. That's the swim is on April the weekend of April the 12th, isn't it, Ciarán?
Yeah, it is. Okay. It's on the weekend, the 12th, the Saturday, and then we're back in Dublin, then the 13th, working our way around north, staying in Galway for the night, and then around south.
Okay.
And then back to Dublin.
And give us those website details. Where can people hook up with us?
Well, it's called Caring for Patrick.
Okay.
For the charity, but I can't remember. I have a link for my donation page and a few other guys.
Okay.
But it's in my donation page, it's in the email.
Okay, we'll put all that stuff up. Okay. Ciarán, thanks indeed. And Reinhard Shaler, thank you also. And we were talking about Patrick Shaler, and David Gilna was the man who started the conversation at 1:45. 51551 back after this. It's Kevin Kelly there in Carlow. Kevin, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
It's about travel insurance. What happened?
Yeah, about this time last year, well, on 21st of April, myself and my son Tom, we headed off from Carlow. We cycled to Santiago de Compostela in Spain from here. And One of the things I did before I left, I made sure that we had the travel insurance that specifically covered us for what we were doing. So I asked them, would it cover us for cycling? And we were going to be continuously cycling for 3 weeks. And
okay.
So we got covered for that. So about a week, on the third week, you know, we're going into Spain.
Mm-hmm.
Tom was fairly tired this day. And we got to a point where we could look back and on a corner of a road and look back and all the people walking on the Camino track. And I turned around. And there was Tom on the road, and he was roaring and shouting, and he had fallen off his bike. His leg had gone into the wheel somehow. He got caught on his pedal, and his kneecap was at 45 degrees to where it should be. So I was in the middle of nowhere, not knowing what to do. So a Spanish man came along and helped me out and phoned the ambulance, and all that was brilliant, and they took great care of us. So when we came out of the hospital, now it's time to phone the travel insurance. So my first thoughts was, you know, here we go. Like, you know, you hear all these stories about these lads, you know.
The loopholes and the escape clauses and...
Yeah. Well, I have to say, you know, I didn't ask for anything.
Mm-hmm.
They'd done everything for me. They organised my wife, Sue. They organised for her to come out and take Tom home because so he wouldn't travel alone. They organised the flights so he could have... three seats. Even Ryanair were very good to us, and they organised hotels, hire of a car. They just came back and said, "Do you want more? You know, are you all right now? Is everything okay?" One specific thing they asked us: "Have you got? Did you wear a helmet?"
Okay.
And it seems to us that if we weren't wearing a helmet at the time, it was game over. You know.
Even though it was his foot and his kneecap that suffered the...
Yeah. But if we hadn't been wearing a helmet at the time, there would have been a clause there for a get-out clause for them, you know? But that was in the that was in the fine print. That was already there.
That's worth it. Yeah, it's definitely, as Ryan Hatch-Shaler said, it's definitely worth looking at the fine print. But he challenged it because he challenged it vigorously because it's true, Mo, the wearing of a cycle helmet is not obligatory and it's not illegal not to wear a cycle helmet.
No.
So why would they simply invoke it? Now, as I say, he vigorously, and he got an ex gratia segment or payment out of them, but he's still pursuing it for, there's another 100,000 overhang on the medical bill which he's faced with. But you say even in that clause there was he wearing a cycle helmet?
Yes, first question.
Okay, and did he have been...
This year there's 30 of us cycling to Rome and we have the fine print well read.
Yeah. So. Okay, well done. And has your son make a full recovery, knee and...
Oh, no bothering him at all. No bothering.
Great, okay. Safe travelling again. This year, okay. Kevin, when you head off to Italy,
Home
to Rome. Okay, well done. That's Kevin Kelly in Carlo. Let me bring in Kiva Nimilor. Kiva, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe.
You're involved in fundraising for Pádraig Shaler. Go ahead.
Yeah, I am.
How did you get involved?
Well, I was friendly with Park from college. We were both at Trinity together. And I lived with him for a year in the Scam Cunha, the Irish language living scheme.
Of course.
So Park was a great Gaelgor, and we were also in the Irish language study in Cumann Gaeilge together. So I, along with, I think, around 50 friends of Park's, will be taking part in a swim all around Ireland over 2 days on the 12th and 13th of April. And if I could just like let listeners know that they can donate if they want to that swim if they go to idonate.ie
okay.
and search for SNAMH, S-N-A-M-H, they'll find the event and they can donate to anyone on the team.
Okay. And Reinhard Pádraig's point that on the one hand they could get the hospital treatment in and the hospital bed. And it's obviously very high tech in Hamburg. There's only three of them here, he was told, and they were obviously with our population, it would not be enough. But one of the things he was worried about was taking him away from his friends. Now, we know Pádraig is in a coma, but how have you all managed to keep in touch? You there, Paul, again? Kiva? Kiva's there.
Sorry, me? Sorry.
Yes, Kiva, yes.
It is funny because some of these people maybe I haven't seen. I lived with Park 2 years ago, so maybe I hadn't seen them. I was a bit older than Park, so I graduated before him. So this is one of the nice things in a strange way that's come out of this. A lot of people have gotten back together. It's all been done through social media, over Facebook. Okay. We're all very active on Twitter. We just really want to help the family as much as we can because we just feel terrible about what they're going through at the moment.
Okay. Thanks, Lee Kiva, and idonate.ie. Is that page for Pádraig